This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, we're here with April Ryan at Politicon. She's been good enough to join us. She's, of course, with American Urban Radio Networks. She's part of the White House Press Corps, much to the agitation of the Trump administration, which we greatly appreciate. She's only been declared the Journalist of the Year by the National Association of Black Journalists and won an NAACP Image Award. So thank you for joining us, April.
Thank
appreciate
you for
it.
I'm so excited to be on Young Turks. This is crazy. I'm really a fan.
Thank you, April. I appreciate it. She's got a new book out, Under Fire, Reporting from the Front Lines of the Trump White House. Well, unfortunately, that's a little bit too literal. You've asked some questions that I thought were perfectly normal.
Thank you. Right? Thank you, because sometimes you walk out of there like, am I crazy?
Yeah.
What happened, you know?
So, I mean, get a load of the first interaction that made the biggest headlines with you and Trump. When you said, hey, are you going to meet with the Congressional Black Caucus?
Well, that's normal when you're talking about doing an urban agenda, trying to fix the problems in urban America, right? The Congressional Black Caucus. And I also included the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, but we couldn't get to that point.
It would be weird if somebody didn't ask that question. On that issue, whether you're a Republican or a Democratic president, and you're talking about urban issues, are you going to be talking to the Black Caucus, Hispanic Caucus, et cetera? And then Trump, if you don't remember, asked April to set up the meeting. What? She's a reporter. Why would she set up that meeting? And then he said, aren't you friends with them? So now, April, look, we get to say it a little bit more, right, because we have perspective and it's easier for us. But so how is that not at least
racist?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I there is a tinge of racism, but let me take you back as to why I thought it was something else when it was happening, that moment. That moment's still very cringeworthy for me. I don't like watching it. It was an ugly moment for the nation.
Mm-hmm.
A U.S. president had what was perceived to be an Archie Bunker moment or an Al Bundy moment.
Mm-hmm.
To a dean of the press corps who happens to be black and a woman. But it was deeper than that. The problem is that about 2 weeks prior to that, I got into an altercation with one of his assistants who's no longer at the White House, who was fired. We heard about it December 12th or 13th, the night of December 12th, 13th. I'm talking about Omarosa. She and I used to be friends, a synopsis of a synopsis. We were friends. And she wanted to be perceived as loyal in the Trump administration. So she went after, well, in the campaign and the administration. So she went after a reporter that was close to her, me. She lied on me saying I was taking money from Hillary Clinton, which was a total lie. Right. To kill my career. Here I am, a divorced mother of two children, single mom trying to make a living that I've been doing for years. I was there when she was there. She got fired the first time in the Clinton administration, and I told her I was going to be there when you get fired this time, and it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this. But she wanted to show that she was loyal to them, put my head on a platter, and serve it up to the president. And she was in his ear telling mm-hmm. him things. So by her saying, because I was in WikiLeaks like a lot of other reporters, and we'll talk about that later, because I'm not mad about the WikiLeaks thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what she had done was to put me on blast to the president. So when that moment happened and he said, are they your friends? After Omarosa 2 weeks ago had said to everybody out loud that I was taking money from Hillary Clinton, and she had been saying that all along in that fight near the Oval Office, outside the press office, I felt it was more sinister than it was racial.
Well, that's interesting. I actually did not know that background at the time. I remember now that you and Omarosa had a falling out.
And the book is not all about her, but I give you that beginning to understand
right.
how it all started.
Yeah.
And then there's more to it.
So it wasn't just saying, hey, you're a black person. Do you know other black people? It was questioning your credibility, your
my
objectivity.
Integrity,
and,
my integrity,
right.
who I was. And All I knew was at that moment the blood was rushing to my ears, and I was shaking my head at that moment.
Right, yeah.
Like, no, like, I can't do that. Because I am supposed to write the story. I'm not supposed to create the story. I'm not supposed to be the story. At that moment, I wound up being the story, and I had to tell the President of the United States, who should have known better, know that I can't do this.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, April. We've gotten to a situation where you guys in the, and I'll call it mainstream press, because you're on CNN now.
But American Urban Radio Networks is also mainstream as well.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was going to get to. And so you guys are in a tough spot, because you have to be trying to be quote-unquote objective about a guy who is clearly unfit for office. How do you, as president, not know that reporters don't set up meetings with a Congressional Black Caucus? I mean, any one of a thousand things he has done is disqualifying for anyone else. But if you say that, then people question. But I think that's perfectly objective to say that, right?
Yeah,
But people then question you and go, well, no, you're not being fair to him. You're supposed to normalize and say, of course the president shouldn't know anything about being a president.
So here in that moment, all I knew was I'm not supposed to do that. That's not my job. I'm asking you about this. And then what I felt in that moment was the weight of what had been going on had come to bear for the world to see. But everybody didn't know the backstory.
Mm-hmm.
But at that moment, the president didn't look so good because he didn't flush it out, you know. And then after that, Sean Spicer talked about shaking my head and things. And then Sarah Huckabee picked up right where Sean left off.
So let me ask you about the rest of the press, because Sean Spicer and Sarah Huckabee Sanders can say anything they like, right? Oh, I can't believe
you. Not necessarily, because that first day he came out talking about the crowd size. Size matters with this administration, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But the first day, that nailed his coffin shut, really. It was just a slow nailing, but it nailed his coffin shut.
Yeah, but to me, they lie every single day, seven times a day.
But they can't say, there's an accountability. Sean can't get a job technically right now, and if Sarah leaves, that might happen too. Hope Hicks had a hard time. She's now with Fox. I mean, what's going on? I mean, these people can't say everything they want. People there's a segment of America that believes them and validates them for whatever reason, and then there's another segment of America saying things aren't right.
So I'm curious about the reaction of the rest of the press, because let's say Sean Spicer says, hey, I can't believe you shook your head when the president seemed like an absolute moron and doesn't know how to be president. Okay, how dare you shake your head at anything that anyone that knows anything about being a president would shake their head at? Okay, that's fine. That's Sean Spicer doing that. What is the reaction of the rest of the press? Are they then like a little worried that, hey, you got called out on that? Do you see what I'm saying?
So yeah. So let me say this. It's a different day. I started with Helen Thomas and Sam Donaldson, the greats, you know, Ann Compton, Bill Plant. I worked with those people.
You were straight out of Ann Compton.
I get it. We're not far from Compton. So look, but I saw them work, and I learned from the greats. I mean, I was a journalist, but to be a White House correspondent was totally different. I learned from the greats, and Helen took me under her wing. Sam, I mean, we were friends, you know, we worked together. We friendly adversarial relationship. We were part of the White House press corps. That was a different day. When something happened like that, we all knew if it happens to them, it can happen to us. Now in that room, and I know a lot of people, you know, some of the White House press corps may not like it, but I don't care. I'm a dean of that room. I've been there 21 years. I was there before many of them were even born, okay, for real. And that's the truth. So this room is divided now. You have conservative journalists. You have liberal journalists. And then you have some like Walter Cronkite. That's the way it was, down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be, and I hope I am, that's the way it was. So what happens is the conservative journalist, like, that's what she gets.
Mm-hmm.
The liberal journalist, like, oh my God. I don't want to be perceived as an advocate journalist. I don't want to be perceived part of the resistance. But I'm told that once I told the president no, people thought I was the resistance. That's not my job to do what he asked me to do.
So,
and that compromise, that would compromise my journalistic integrity.
So, April, Sam.
I would have liked to be in the room if they had that meeting. That's what I would have liked to be. If they had that meeting, I wasn't in the room. But I did do pool that day. But I would like to hear, you know, what they were saying since I brought the question up. But I would not set up the meeting.
Sam Donaldson was on The Young Turks a long time ago. And he had a great, great story about how if the Reagan or Clinton White House ever called to complain about the questions that he asked, Rune Arledge would give him a raise. Okay, and I'm a, which is
I haven't gotten a raise. I would like some more money, but I haven't gotten a raise. No, and, I need one to pay for my security. But go ahead.
So you were there with Sam, and you saw him ask those tough questions, and back then that was literally rewarded. I'm afraid that we don't have the same situation now. What's your take on that?
We don't have the same situation. I'm not looking for a reward. I'm just doing my job. But if you notice, I just ask a question, and then the response is so off the wall that it makes me the story. Mm-hmm. They have done this to me. I didn't ask for this. I just ask a question about, with Sean, stop shaking your head. Sean, how are you going to change the optics of Russia? That's a simple question. But then he has to go into, well, if you have a salad, and it has Russian salad dressing, then you have Russia and all this stuff. It was so trite. Yeah. You know, he didn't have to do that. And that put the spotlight on me. And then I asked the question, certain issues, you know, like just certain questions, like, you know, the president goes out tweeting about a female federal lawmaker about how, you know, she was asking for a lot of stuff, you know, and insinuating it was sexual. And then I'm ridiculous for saying that, was he insinuating that? And you don't, it's not beyond the realm of possibility when the president was on tape with Billy Bush talking about grabbing the pee. Using a tic-tac.
Yep.
But I'm the one who's crazy. And they make it, they put the focus on you trying to make you look crazy. And then in turn, you watch Fox News, they're talking about, oh, the most ridiculous question, the most ridiculous reporter. April puts a target on my head. And then Breitbart writes lies about me. And mm-hmm. any conservative group writes a lie about me. And then I'm looking for attention. No, I'm just asking a question. You made me blow up.
Yeah, I'm reminded of that in that example of when Trump.
And my company doesn't mind it, but I haven't gotten a raise.
To answer the question, right?
Yeah.
I'm reminded of the absurd thing that Trump said about Megyn Kelly. She's bleeding from wherever. And then everybody knows what that means. And then they act all outraged when people say, we know what that means.
It's called President Explain, you know, like mansplaining. So the president will say something, and then Sarah Huckabee, no, that's not what he meant. You know, he meant this. I'm like, she's trying to insult the intelligence of the American people. And that, you know, not only that, I'm still stuck on the Megyn Kelly thing happened a while ago. So I'm not normalizing it. But the most recent thing, when we were talking about voter IDs and everything, you know, the president goes out to a rally talking about, well, you know how you go to a grocery store and you need an ID. I'm like, when is the last time I needed an ID to go to the grocery store? So the next day, Sarah says, and the next day, she said, well, you know, the president, what he meant to say, well, what he was saying was when you go to the grocery store to get alcohol and beer. I'm like, that's not what he said.
Not remotely what he
said. That's what I'm saying. So they're always trying to clean up his inartful speech.
Yeah.
And his Archie Bunker speech.
I feel like you're not even saying the emperor doesn't have clothes. You're just asking them, hey, where's his clothes?
Right? Yeah, not on him. Why is he walking out like right. that naked?
And then they're like, how dare you say that? As he's standing, you know, in this analogy, stark naked in front of the whole country.
Stark naked. And I don't want to see it.
Right. No, nobody wants to see it.
I just don't want to see it.
Yeah. So now you mentioned, it's in the title of your book, too, that... Under fire, and you mentioned, hey, this is serious.
And, it is.
And this is something that I've been talking about for a long time. The right wing thinks it's a game, and they treat it like a game. So when Trump talks about body slamming reporters.
That's not cool.
And then somebody in the audience tells Jim Acosta, does the thing where we're going to cut your throat. And then later they ask him for an autograph, and Jim can't figure out why. And I figured it out, because they think it's WWE. Okay.
Right.
Right.
It's a joke. It's part of the reality show. This is not a reality show. This is a taxpayer's expense. And not only that, all of this comes at a time when we are trying to get answers about the death of an American journalist. And the problem is the president has not gone in far enough and forceful enough about getting answers from the Saudis of what happened in that consulate to Jamal Khashoggi. And it's not right. If that could happen to Jamal, it could happen to all of us.
Yeah. Yeah, no. What Pat Robertson said was haunting. And unfortunately, the Trump administration is following up on it, which is he's like, what is one man compared to a big arms deal? And so what that tells reporters is you can walk into any embassy or anywhere in the world, and they can murder you, and then they'll turn around and go, yeah, but it's only one person. We got to make money.
Well, wait a minute. But here's the thing. It's not just about a journalist. It's about an American citizen. What is the life? What if someone gets stuck somewhere or something happens? Oh, what is that one life? And they're on vacation or something or on business and go into a consulate and somebody has a bone saw, accidentally saws their body up.
Yeah.
And then, oh, what's that two arms? You know, what's that compared to one life? It's not just about us. If they can do it to us, they can do it to anyone else.
Yeah. And so how real is it for you? Are you worried about your security?
There's collateral damage. Yeah, and that's, I don't want to talk about it anymore, but yeah. But I'm not giving up, because mm-hmm. if I walk away, they win. And it's not about winning or losing. I've been doing this. This is what I studied in school. I have a community that's so proud of me, that lifted me up and sent me off. My late mother and father would roll over in their graves if I walked away. I'm five generations from the last known slave in my family. And I am blessed to be able to go to that place every day, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, in good times and bad times. And I've done my job. I've spoken the truth. And some people just can't take it. It's like nails on a chalkboard. They don't want to hear the truth. When their president has told them, when our president has told them, or told us, what he's doing. Maya Angelou said it succinctly. When someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Yeah. So that leads to the question of how is he getting away with it? And so let me.
It's laughable, right? Yeah. You gotta laugh to keep him crying.
Yeah. Yeah, because so he said he fell in love with Kim Jong-un. April, let me ask you this. If Hillary Clinton was president and she had said.
Crooked Hillary, right?
Yeah. If Hillary Clinton had said, I fell in love with Kim Jong-un, what do you think the press reaction would have been?
Oh my God, she wouldn't be in office today. They would have run them out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
For real. You know, I remember George W. Bush, been around long enough to cover him, axis of evil, one of the points of the axis of evil. Here's what's the problem. And people, you know, people don't, President Trump, everything is great. He's done the greatest job ever on anything. What I will say is talking is better than war. They're talking. There's efforts of diplomacy, which is mm-hmm. great.
Yep.
But diplomacy is still working because it's still fragile. But at the same time, with Kim Jong-un, with North Korea and with Iran and with Russia, we are a nation that still does not have the accuracy and intelligence as to what they're doing. And we've got to be careful about how much allegiance we pledge so soon and so fast. We have to let things work out. What was old Reagan saying? Trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
We're not doing the verification.
Yeah. So, but it seems to me that there's a double standard here, and I don't know how we solve it. I don't know if you know or anybody knows, but if Barack Obama puts mustard on his hamburger, we got a news story on Fox News. If he wears a tan suit or he's holding a coffee while saluting.
I actually like the tan suit.
I liked it too.
Right. President Trump wants to come out in a tan suit. Yeah. I don't have a problem with being like, oh, does it go with the orange?
Yeah, that might be an issue.
Yeah, it might clash.
A little bit of a clash, right?
Yeah.
But So we got a standard where one guy, I criticize Obama on 100 things, and I think legitimately so on drone strikes. And
you have to criticize every
right.
president. You have, because it makes the democracy great. You cannot, it's not the emperor with the new clothes. Every president, no matter Democrat or Republican, even Barack Hussein Obama, even for black people, you have got to push them, because only if the squeaky wheel gets the oil. If you don't push, they're not going to do it in a lot. We are a reactionary society. We are a reactionary people. The White House is reactionary. Look at Parkland. Look at zero tolerance. And look at what Brett Kavanaugh, even though he was confirmed, they did listen. The president came out and said, I believe Dr. Ford. And then even Kellyanne Conway came out saying she was sexually assaulted. But they saw that people were believing her, so he had to go out and smear her and mock her. And what did he say on 60 Minutes? I had to do that to win, by any means necessary. So the people who listen to the president, they listen to him because they understand there's more at stake. It's not about Donald. They're willing to turn their head and hold their nose with mm-hmm. all that stuff, the grabbing of the pee with the Tic Tac and the questions of Stormy Weather, Stormy Daniels, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. And even watching that crazy back and forth on Twitter, the horse face versus the tiny and mm-hmm. your shortcomings. That's a president. Anyway, moving on, I digress. So, but they are willing to hold their nose and turn their head for the Supreme Court. I don't want abortion. I want marriage, man and woman, tax breaks, gun control. They're willing to turn their head on all of the crazy that has now put us in a constitutional crisis, a national security crisis, any other crisis that you can name, all for the sake of these few items.
So at the end of the day, that's exactly right. And at the end of the day, if you're a Democrat, the other Democrats will rain holy hell on you if you step out of line a little bit. But for Republicans, it appears to me that there is no bottom. So Trump can say horse face. He can say all those things.
At this moment, it doesn't seem like there is. I mean, I look at these ministers. I'm a Christian. And, you know, I teach my children. I teach, you know, the children, the people I mentor. We don't talk about people. And I don't even like when people go up there talking about Sarah Huckabee Sanders' looks.
I don't
talk about her looks. I don't like people talking about mine. They call me Miss Piggy.
Yeah, you know, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? Miss Piggy's fabulous. And I used to call myself Miss Piggy in college, so I'm not upset by that. But I think we have now become the underbelly of what we despise. But what we need to do is understand that we are going through growing pains. And this is what I'm seeing from reporting at that magnificent historic place for 21 years. What will make the leaders who are supporting him, who the religious leaders or the congressional leaders or whatever, whoever supports him, I think if people stop being afraid of the bully and understand that we, the people who are still forming a more perfect union, rise up.
Yeah.
We're still going through the growing pains. This we the people thing is really hitting me. This freedom thing is really hitting me over the last 2 years, because people are going, oh my God. Well, what are we going to do? Some people are still in the fetal position. I'm like, what do you mean, what are you going to do? Go vote. Voting is one of the tools. If you're unhappy, I don't care who you vote for, but if you're unhappy, do something about it. Don't complain. Do something about it.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I just think people need to get out of that fetal position. I don't know what is going on. We are going backwards in a lot of ways. But I think if people really want change, and I don't care who you vote for, Democrat or Republican, go to the polls. And if you want to be heard, march. Put the shoe leather. Pick up the blueprint that Dr. King had. That was one of the most successful blueprints that we have in this nation.
You know, you actually just gave me hope, because you're right. The yes, the way that
you know me.
yes, and I'll tell you why. Because the way a bully is defeated is at the end, is if people see that he actually has no power. Yeah, and so in
you
this case,
get in their face.
Yes, in this case, if the Democrats win the House, and I think it appears based on the polling, not on hopes and wishes, that they have an excellent chance of winning it back.
I don't believe in polls anymore, because after what happened, I mean, we can't trust polls, but I'm going to say this. I believe that there are enough people on the blue side that are upset, but I also believe that there's like this quiet red something going on. It's a little bit more than the tidal wave. They're sitting back watching. Okay, all right, we're going to see, because they're going to the polls. What I see right now, though, is the understanding. Even President Trump understands that they may lose the House, but I also understand that they are going to do anything by any means necessary. Look what's happening in Georgia with Stacey Abrams. They are trying to throw mm-hmm. out that. Who still stays in a job that you oversee the election and you running in that election?
It's
who,
unbelievable.
It's like, what? And then they're throwing out all of these absentee ballots. Look at what's happening in North Dakota, where the Native Americans, whose land this is, they're told you can't vote if you don't have a street address because they live on a reservation. There is hope, but people have got to fight back for what they want.
Yeah, just if I'm
so we don't know. I'm not sure it's going to be all blue, because there's some hanky panky going on.
No, there is, and you're right. I mean, Kemp overseeing his own election is
That's
an outrage.
Just wild.
They're like literally pulling over black people in buses going to vote in Georgia.
About?
No, it's
that's and, like and 50s and 60s before the Voting Rights Act.
That's right, because they cheat and they think they have to cheat because they're.
But there's voter fraud.
Yeah,
but he won't answer voter suppression questions.
Yeah, voter fraud. By the way, 31. people in a 14-year time period. It is literally more likely that you'll be struck by lightning. But anyway, if the Democrats do get the House, though, then I think people might begin to see, oh, this guy actually doesn't have magic. There is no magic. There is no, like, he winds up winning no matter what. No, actually, he can get routed. It turns out he's not that strong at all. And so that might change people's perception of him.
Well, let me say this. The devil's in the details on this. Let's say the House is blue. Let's say Nancy Pelosi keeps her seat, or maybe not. Maybe someone else, you know, Democrat has it. Let's say Elijah Cummings now goes back to be the head of oversight and reform, and all the other Democrats get all these powerful positions back in those committees. Let's say that happens. Let's say that the Mueller report comes out. Donald Trump is an unindicted co-conspirator. It now goes political over here to the House, who starts impeachment. The Senate is Republican. No conviction, meaning he remains. He's just impeached. Like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, every time, he's going to be impeached. They're looking for impeachment. What you want, figure out what you want. Do you just want the mark on his name and his record, or do you want removal? So you might be back at square one, you know? So, but the question is 2020. But what I will tell you is people are rising up. And you see this. People are rising up on both sides. But it took 8 years for the actual rise up against Barack Obama with Donald Trump. But it's taken less than two against Donald Trump. You have all these women running. Never have you ever imagined that Florida would see a black man possibly win the governorship. Never in my wildest dreams, the state of Georgia, a black woman who has natural hair, who could possibly be the governor of that state. And they're so concerned, they're playing these tactics. And they say it's a dead heat. No, she's actually winning, you know, in the polls.
No. That's why they're doing the voter suppression, because they're in a cold sweat panic.
And all these other places where you have all these minorities who are saying, this is not acceptable. So there, people are rising up, but there's still that group that are scared of the bully. And my aunt used to say, all you got to do is hit a bully one good time and they'll leave you alone.
Yeah.
I don't believe in violence, but sometimes you have to.
No, but you could hit them in the ballot box. And so in November 6th, this is the chance for people with my perspective to hit the bully in the mouth through their votes, right?
I'll be covering it. I don't know who. I want people to. I don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican. Just go to the polls.
Yeah.
And I'm not pushing you either way.
Yeah, I am.
you can do that. Yeah. I can't.
Vote for progressives. Okay. And any old blue just won't do, as Greg Edwards said in Pennsylvania. Okay, vote for progressives. So now, last thing. Yes. Post-Trump presidency, because you are the dean of the White House Press Corps. There's going to be another one, and you're still going to be there. Okay, very likely.
Yeah, I'm gonna be at the White House. I can't go anywhere.
Can't outlast you. So, do you think that the press corps has changed a little bit? Have they gotten a little bit more aggressive? That hey, we're supposed to challenge the person at the podium.
As the news media is shining a bright light on them when they mess up by not supporting one another in the room, they're doing it, but I just wish many of those people in that room were there when I was there. They would learn how to do it. They're learning on the job. It's a learn on the job situation, but we're in a space that I've never seen before, and I'm hopeful. I've always got hope for a greater day and better day. We're just going through growing pains, you know. A lot of the old guard has retired or died. And now we've got this young crop that we've got to teach, and I guess I've got to help teach them. Some of them want to challenge me. I'm like, okay, but you don't want to come here. Don't come for me unless I call for you. I actually have some of that in my book. Because these new young conservatives don't know my political persuasion, but they think that I'm going after the president and they want to stand up with the administration, but you don't realize you make yourself look bad. And I'm going to stand, and I'm going to shine even more the more you come after me.
No, well, there you go. And that's the book is Under Fire, Reporting from the Front Lines of the Trump White House.
Yes.
Okay,
get
so
your copy.
If you're going to come, you better come correct.
That's right.
April Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate
it. This is a dream. I cannot believe this. This is a dream
come true. Thank you so much for us, too.